Today, school is more than just a place of learning. The classroom has become a home away from home for some students, especially those whose lives involve big challenges. And increasingly, school is the place kids seek help with their social-emotional needs.
What are the best ways to do that, though? How should schools strike a balance between social-emotional and academic learning? And what are educators in the Milwaukee area already doing on this front? That is the question in front of a panel assembling today at Marquette Law School.
The conference will feature Chester Finn, a longtime, well-known education activist who's also a distinguished senior fellow at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute in Washington, D.C. He joined Lake Effect's Rachel Morello in studio to talk about the value of social-emotional learning in today's schools.
I've heard this term social-emotional learning. Other people might have heard it, but what is your definition of that term?
It is an aspect of education that we haven't been very self-conscious about in the past, though good schools have always done it sort of tacitly and indirectly, that attempts to ensure that kids feel good about themselves and are purposeful and motivated, considerate of others, and able to get along in the world, in addition, I hope, to learning the three R's, the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, to which I think I would add history and science. I've been making a little bit of a fuss in a negative sort of way about an overemphasis on social-emotional learning. And I guess my modest beef with an overemphasis on social-emotional learning is we're already not doing a very good job with the three R's in history and science. And when we start giving schools too many other jobs, too many other assignments, and we've been doing this for decades and decades and decades. I mean, they're supposed to do sex education and drug abuse education, and you can go right on down a long list of things that schools have been told, problems in society that schools have been told to solve. Every time we give them another mandate, we basically erase time for the things schools are uniquely qualified for, which is teaching kids long division and the causes of the Civil War. I mean, there are lots of organizations in society that work on social-emotional learning directly or indirectly. Sunday school, the Girl Scouts, Little League. You can make a long list. And they don't teach long division. And unless we're going to give schools about 15 hours a day of kids' lives, I don't think we can cram that much more into the school day we've already got. Yeah, good schools have always done this. They do this. Part of character development. It's part of discipline. It's part of being nice. It's part of getting along with others and not being completely self-absorbed. It's part of listening to your teacher. And I'm not quite sure why we're making such a big fuss about it today.
So it sounds like your argument is that if it's sort of just worked into the school day within the three R's, the main lessons, then it's, you know, it's
only
worth spending time on. But if it's something that your teachers and people are spending extra time on top of those other
things. Or instead of those things.
Okay.
Yeah. It's also hard to teach these things. We know how to teach long division or phonics or the causes of the Civil War. It's very hard to teach niceness. You can model it if you're a good teacher. You can describe it. It's very hard to make kids be nice.
So as somebody who's studied education and looked at schools for some time now, do you see this as sort of a new phenomenon, this emphasis on social-emotional learning? Is this something that now we're talking about, even though some schools have been doing it for a while? Why are we talking about it now?
I'm not sure why, but I think it's one of our current fads in education. We've always had fads in education, but some of them are kind of descendants of earlier fads. And I'm seeing the social-emotional learning in part as a descendant of what in the 1980s was called self-esteem. And a really sort of pernicious thing that gave us an overemphasis on do kids feel good about themselves? And do they feel like they respect themselves? Well, it turns out in all the research that Asian kids do much better than our kids on tests but feel much less good about themselves. So why are we emphasizing feeling good about yourself if you haven't learned to read, write, and do arithmetic?
I might be asking you to give me a little preview of this event tomorrow because I know we've got other people on this panel with you who take opposite viewpoints of view. What are some of the arguments you've heard for people who do argue social-emotional learning?
The Aspen Institute has a commission underway that is working very hard to promote social-emotional learning in education. They've produced some research that some of the cognitive psychologists whom I respect actually think is pretty robust research, which basically says that kids who are emotionally stable and balanced are likely to do better academically. as opposed to kids who are really antsy or nervous or insecure or feel badly about themselves. So there is something to be said in the research literature for kids learning more or learning better if they are kind of emotionally stable. That stands to reason. I mean, if you go into school famished or you're really hungry or you didn't get a good night's sleep, you're not going to learn very well. Mm-hmm. If you go into school and you are really, really anxious about somebody hates me, it'd be harder to learn. So sure, there is a competent research that suggests that kids who are sort of emotionally stable are going to learn more. And I think that's worth taking seriously. Mm-hmm. But it is not necessarily the same thing as saying schools should teach social emotional learning.
So I'm glad you brought that up because I feel, especially here in Milwaukee, we hear a lot about sort of the other things that are happening in kids' lives outside of school, whether it's at home or in their neighborhood, what have you. And it seems like there are two camps. It's up to the parents and the home for social emotional learning mm-hmm. to take place, or mm-hmm. it's now it's become an added responsibility of school. Does that sound like a fair characterization?
Yeah, I'd broaden the parents and home to say other institutions of civil society, the other things that people belong to, whether it's the Rotary Club or the Girl Scouts, have a obligation to work on character, morality, behavior, and they're good at those things. Anybody that's ever been to a good scout camp knows that you have to help other people put up their tents, and you have to share the cooking duties. If you're on a little league team or a swim team, you learn something about sportsmanship. There are a lot of institutions in society, and many kids belong to them, that are good at these things.
Alan Borsak, who's the fellow at Marquette Law and mm-hmm. is hosting this panel event you're going to be a part of, one of the questions that he wrote in describing this event was, we want to discuss how schools should strike a balance or can strike a balance between academic learning and social-emotional learning. Do you think there is a balance that can be struck there?
Yeah, again, I don't think social-emotional learning is a subject in the curriculum. I don't think it is fifth period and comes between English and math. It's something that, to the extent that schools do it, should infuse the entire culture of the school, the behavior of people in the school, the discipline code of the school, and the extracurricular stuff that the school encourages or sponsors. So I think it kind of infuses. I don't think it's something that is a curriculum, let's say. So I think that's the balance. But it's like any good school. The culture of the school, what people think they're there for and why it's important, is very subtle. It's very hard to transform. It's why it's so hard to turn around bad schools, is because this sort of special culture of success and achievement and of yearning and of studying and so on, it's very hard to impose by making rules or state accountability systems or things like that.
As you're talking, I'm thinking of our state report cards out of Wisconsin and the things that they measure to measure
yep.
good or bad schools.
Yep.
And emotional, social, those sorts of things aren't graded.
No, you don't measure them. They don't measure well. And if you can't quantify it, it's hard to put it in a report card. Mm-hmm. Now, in England, where they have what they call the school inspectorate, which are veteran educators that go around and visit schools all over the country and write reports about what they see and hear and feel and smell in the school, that's feedback for the school team and the governing body to get a sense of how well put together, how well functioning is this school. But those are things you figure out by visiting the school and spending a few days there. You can't really measure it.
Would we benefit from having an inspectorate of our own?
I think so, actually. I think that it's far better than on the one hand, just relying on test scores, though I think they have an important role to play, or on the other hand, sort of ginning up other things that we're going to tell schools that they're charged with doing that we have no good way of gauging the effectiveness of. A school inspectorate or something like that is a potentially valuable addition. I mean, a lot of state ESSA plans under the new federal law have a category, and it goes into the report cards for so-called school quality.
I know we've mentioned ESSA on our air before, but I want to make sure that I clarify for our listeners. That's the Every Student Succeeds Act.
It is the federal Every Student Succeeds Act and the successor to the much-loved and much-hated No Child Left Behind Act. A lot of people want school culture to be part of that metric. But how to measure it? Well, I'm for my sins on the Maryland State Board of Education. And what we were told to do by the legislature is do surveys of teachers, kids, and parents. And it's not a terrible thing to do. but it ultimately could just turn out to be a kind of popularity or satisfaction measure and not necessarily a really good commentary on the climate and culture of the school. So we'll do it. It's in state law that this should be part of the state's ESSA plan. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not a bad thing to do, but how to get at school culture, school quality in these soft, squishy ways? What are you going to use for the metrics? And then what do you put on the report card? Well, a survey, sure, you can come up with survey data. But I think it'd be better to have sophisticated school inspectors come and spend a few days and tell you what they think's going on.
You said something that I want to go back to, and that is the idea of these inspectors going in and looking at school quality or school culture. Does anybody in the states have anything sort of like that, whether it's on a district level, a state level, a community level? Have you seen anything like that?
They played with it in New York for a while. I don't know if it's continuing. I think the big charter networks do it internally. If you are a KIPP school, which are scattered across 20-plus states, you do get visited by KIPP Central, by the regional director. It's not just for management purposes either. It's not just to see if your filing system is correct. It's also to see whether your school is behaving like a KIPP school is supposed to behave. And incidentally, good sort of local, like regional superintendents, and for that matter, small town superintendents, who are sophisticated at visiting their own schools, have an ear for the culture, not just the bureaucratics of it. So I think that's going on. I just heard the other day that Louisiana is putting in place a kind of inspectorate for its ed schools, for its colleges of education, which I think is a really good idea, because it's really hard to do quality evaluations of them. And I think this is a good idea there. Now, obviously, any kind of inspectorate is subject to two sort of issues. One is, who's to say who the inspectors are? I mean, does the teachers' union get to pick them all? That would be a question. And the other is, because their judgments are sort of inherently subjective, is this a country that's satisfied with making big policy decisions based on subjective opinions? Do they hold up in court? Would be one way of putting it in American society. The quantitative stuff holds up in court because it looks like data, even if it's nothing more than a survey that 7% of the kids completed.
You're visiting Milwaukee. Have you been here before?
Yes, I like Milwaukee.
What's your impression, having visited Milwaukee, of the education scene here?
Well, a lot of things are very interesting to me about the education scene here. They mostly have to do with the multiple sectors, the competitiveness that's going on here, the robustness of the various voucher programs that the state's got, the governance challenges that are all these sectors are facing, the fact that the charter schools and the private schools are demonstrating that they're not all perfect, which I think is important in the school choice argument. So I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin more broadly. Some of which I admire and some of which I think is deplorable. But I think that you face, as any urban district faces, a lot of very disadvantaged kids who lack a lot of important things in their home lives. Part of it, I guess, is social-emotional learning. Part of it is early cognitive stuff, like is anybody reading to these kids when they're little? And you've read about the famous studies of the vocabulary gap, kids who arrive in kindergarten with millions of words different in terms of how many they've heard before the age of five based on what's going on at home. That foreshadows how well they're going to learn to read and school readiness. And obviously there are issues of crime, of physical danger, of hunger, of poor physical health, things like that. And those are something a community does need to address. Absolutely. I don't think we want kids in danger. I don't think we want kids going to bed hungry. I certainly don't want them to be sick if they don't have to be sick. And I think somebody should be reading to them. But school system can't do all these things. It is not an all-purpose cure-all for society's ills.
Chester Finn is a senior fellow and president emeritus of the Fordham Institute in Washington, D.C. He'll appear at Marquette University Law School today as part of a panel discussing the value of social-emotional learning in schools. Finn spoke with Lake Effect's Rachel Morello.